Hey, what up, everybody, and welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. We are at episode 8, which is a little mind-boggling to me. It has gone super fast, but I'm really enjoying what we got going on here. I'm enjoying talking to people. I'm enjoying hearing from all of you, and it's just been a good time. I think what I've found is that everybody has a unique perspective on why they do what they do, and they bring different ideas to their vocation, but we all use those in a certain way to build the kingdom of God, and it's just been really cool hearing from people. Today, we have Ashley. She does adoption work, so she is a caseworker for adoptions that are done domestically there in Lubbock, Texas, where she lives. She also does a lot of ministry at her church because her husband's a pastor, and that's sort of what you do when you're married to a pastor. And then she also has a jewelry business, which we get into and talk a lot about. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from her. She just has some really good insights into not only work, but just how she views her family as work and how she, disciples her children. And she just has a lot of really cool stuff to say. So, make sure you get out there, share with your friends if you don't mind. And I would love a review on iTunes, or wherever else you get your podcast. And let me know how we're doing. Make sure and connect. I am on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle. Always posting some fun stuff there. I've got the funniest children, I think, ever. So you get to see a lot of them, and you get to see what I got going on. So yeah, get out there, share and like, and enjoy this talk with Ashley. All right. Well, hi, Ashley. Thanks for joining me from Texas on the podcast.
Yeah, from Texas. I'm glad to be here.
I love it. But while we get started, why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody? Just tell us a little bit about your story and all of that.
Sure. Well, my name is Ashley, like you said, and I live in Lubbock, Texas with my husband. My husband is a pastor at a church. And it is a non-denominational multi-site church in the Texas Panhandle and into New Mexico. So that is what he does. We live here in Lubbock with our four children. My kids have a one son and three daughters. My son is 12 and my daughters are 10, 8, and 5. And then I do a couple of other things. I do some work in the adoption world. I own a business with a friend of mine and do some ministry at the church that we're a part of. So it's, life is fun, life is full. And it is just, always full steam ahead.
Wow. Yeah. That, sounds like a lot, of stuff you got going on there. There's so many things I want to, hit in your story and what you have going on. Let's start off with the adoption, agency. So what exactly do you do with adoptions?
Yeah, so the adoption agency that I work for is a Christian infant adoption agency. So we work with Christian couples looking to adopt, and we also work with birth mothers who are expectant women who are pregnant and facing maybe an unplanned pregnancy and looking at their options. What are their options? Is it single parenting? We work with a lot of women who have been considering abortion but have decided that they want to choose life. They want to make a plan for their unborn child, and adoption is a great option for them. Some of the couples we work with have struggled with infertility. Some have not. Some just feel that God has called them to adopt, and they want to adopt, domestically as opposed to internationally. But we do most of our placements at the hospital. 48 hours old, we do placement with the family, and then work with and monitor that family until their final hearing 6 months out.
Okay, so do you work primarily with birth mothers or adoptive families, or are you in the midst of the whole thing?
Yeah, I work primarily, I would say, with the families, but I do work with birth mothers as well. I do some of the administrative tasks that come along with that, some oversight with our employees. So I really dabble in all of the areas of it. But I started out working for the agency, working primarily with adoptive couples, and that's transitioned a little bit over the last 7-8 years to where I get to do a lot of different parts of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's awesome. As somebody who has recently gone through the adoption process, as you know, the infant adoption process,
you understand. It is,
I understand, and it is wonderful and horrible all at the same time. And our experience, just the waiting and just the process can be very taxing. So how has that been, like, walking people through that sort of stuff?
Yeah, adoption is all encompassing when it comes to so many things, but especially emotions. It's got the high highs, and then there are some low lows in that as well. So when I work with couples, most couples come in and there are 1,000 questions. And I really feel like it's my role to hit kind of the first layer of questions and just encourage them in what God has called them to do and the place God has called them to, but also just to walk with them through the journey, because I can do my best to answer every single question they have up front. But one thing I know to be true with adoption is there are no two that are the same. Just because it may be typical for a situation to go a certain direction or to happen a certain way doesn't mean that will be the case for their adoption. Just because some adoptive couple birth mother relationships look one way doesn't necessarily that mean that that's what their relationship will look like. And so I feel that what I can do is I can just come in, meet them where they are, because the majority of people who come to adopt, by the time they walk in the doors of our agency or sit across a table from me, it's not the beginning of the journey. There's a long road that they've already walked before they get there. So I just try to do the best that I can to meet them where they are, in the excitement, in the fear, in the pain, in the hurt, in the disappointments, in the loss, that they come into our agency with. Like I said, answer a few of the questions that I can, but really just try to link arms with them in the journey, and walk it out with them.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really cool position to be in. I mean, you get to speak into a season of life that's, like, a lot of times very difficult. Like, even like you said, coming to that place of adoption has this whole backstory of sort of infertility or, you know, whatever journey they've been on. It sounds like a really cool place to be in.
It's very, neat. It's a very, I think it's, maybe a unique line of work to get to partner with a family in something as big as the way that God might choose to grow their family. So not a lot of people get to do that. I enjoy it so much. It's been such a blessing to me. I've learned a lot. I've grown a lot. I feel that God's opened my eyes so much to, one, the world of adoption, but two, the way that he comes after us, that he comes after his people, knowing that adoption is God's idea from the beginning of time. And us as, you know, Gentiles are adopted in, are grafted in by this same process in the same covering of love. And so it's been really neat for me as well, just spiritually understanding the magnitude of what God offers us as those who have been grafted in.
Yeah. Amen. I love that. I love all that stuff. And adoption is something that I really want to talk about a lot on this podcast. You know, it's very near and dear to our hearts. So what do you wish people knew when they came to adoption? What do you feel like some of the, like, misunderstandings a lot of people have, or, you know, people even, like, out there considering adoption, like, what would you sort of speak to them about that sort of thing?
Yeah, I do think one of the things with adoption is it is full of misconceptions. It has been stigmatized by just the unhealthy ways it has been approached and treated in the past. And so a lot of what we're doing in 2018 or, you know, 2005, 2020, work that will continue is undoing some of the misconceptions that have been wrapped up with adoption. Another thing that I consider it a joy to be able to do is just to help steer people toward positive adoption language. Just sometimes the words that we use, the phrasing we use, the verbiage that we used is what helped, what has kept adoption in this kind of scary, negative light for so long. And so I love to come in with people, with families, with extended families of those that are adopting, and just help them say, sometimes if we can just change our terminology, if we can change the language that we use, we're helping not just ourselves, but we are helping change the light that is shed over the beautiful journey of adoption, because it's really what it is. It's a unique journey. It's a beautiful journey. It is, like I said before, it is God's idea, but it is a way that He builds families. And not only that, but He uses adoption to give hope to women who feel like they're in a hopeless situation. I work with so many expectant women who find out they're pregnant. They feel that they are at the end of it's a dead end road for them. They don't know what their options are. They don't know what their choices are. But when someone comes in and says, you can have an option, you can have a choice in adoption, and not only can you choose life for this child, but you can make a loving plan for them. So that's one of the things that I really enjoy doing. You know, talking about adoption language, there's a lot of language that we could talk about. But one of the things that's almost across the board that people say before they've entered the world of adoption is when a woman, you know, gave up her child. And the thing with the expectant women and the birth moms that I work for, they're not giving up anything. They are choosing life for a child. They are making a plan for a child. They believe that they are getting to play a part in a larger story of building a family. They're placing their child for adoption, but they're not giving up their child for adoption. And so it's small things like that, that if when we can begin to change the language, we really begin to change the culture.
Yes, so much yes there. Yeah, that was one of the biggest things when we were going through our adoption process, was just even the term, like you said, making adoption plan, or, you know, as opposed to giving, it just changes everything, especially when our culture has changed very much over to open adoption being, you know, the healthier sort of option for the child, in a long-term process. If you can start building that relationship and using that language early on in the adoption, I assume that helps on down the road with not seeing this woman as some person that like is just sort of worthless, but
yeah,
that she
and
has
she's not
values.
A threat to you. Right. She is a part of your story. She is a part of this child's story for the rest of their lives. She gave them life. And so you're right. When we can change our language, it not only changes us on the inside, but it changes the way adoptive parents talk to their children. We help try to build confidence in the ways they speak to their children, in the language they use around their home. And then it just bleeds out from there. It changes that with extended family members. It changes it with classmates, how a child can embrace their story and confidently share the story of how God brought them into this world and into this family. And it begins to bleed out into classrooms and church friendships. And adoption does change the culture. I'm sure you've seen that happen. It changes the culture of a church. When a family adopts, people begin to, those walls that are often up when it comes to adoption because they've heard horror stories or whatever it may be that have them living out of a place of fear when it comes to adoption, but those walls just begin to come down and the entire culture of a place will change.
Yeah, so much. Yes, very much. That's awesome. I love talking. I think I could sit here and probably talk to you about this the entirety of the day.
There's a lot to talk about.
There is. But you have other jobs that I really want to get to as well. Let's go first into ministry. So you're Brad is a pastor. And so what does that mean for you and sort of how you do church?
Yeah, I think it's meant different things at different times. There was a time when my husband started out doing ministry and he was doing student ministry. And so what that looked like for me meant being involved with students, leading small groups and things of that. He's done college ministry. And so that was, you know, something we partnered on, leading groups of college students, having a lot of college students in our home. He's done groups ministry at times. And there was a season where he did groups ministry. And so we partnered together and just, you know, led small groups and helped train people on how to be a great leader in a small group setting. But for right now, when we moved to Lubbock 6 years ago, that looked a lot like helping launch some forms of women's ministry, Bible studies, and things of that nature. But it's really transitioned over time. So right now, I get to be a voice in what's happening in the women's ministry at our church. The course of action that's getting to take, I get to have a voice in that, be someone who prays for and takes on the responsibility of just what would God have for us at this church, these women in this, you know, in this season. A lot of what I do, I feel like my ministry really is with my family. I get to create a home that my husband wants to come home to. I get to be a safe place for him after maybe a hard day or, you know, a long day, a hard day, a spiritually tough day, an emotionally tough day. I get to just be a place where I want him to come and to be a landing place for him. And that's a lot of what we do. I feel like what I do is have conversations. I encourage him. I want to speak life into him. I want to be someone that is seeking God so personally that when he comes to me and has just wants advice or to talk through things like he does so often, that I'm not speaking out of my flesh, but I am someone who's aligning with him in seeking God so that I can just continue to, maybe God would give me vision for where he has our, where he has us going as a church, as a people. I serve on Sunday mornings. One of my favorite places is to serve or with first-time guests. So I'd love to be someone that when people walk into our church for the first time, I get to meet them. I get to learn their name. I get to introduce them to the environments that our church has. I get to ask questions after church, ask how it was, what they thought, what they enjoyed, you know, encourage them to come back and just letting people know that we always have a place for them. In addition, I think part of that's just with my children, with their ages and seasons, doing my work. And this is really just my work as a mother, my call to disciple my own children. I don't know that it necessarily has much to do with my husband being a pastor. I think most of what I do as a mother, what we do as a family, we would do whether or not my husband was in ministry. But I do know that that's part of my life and my ministry in this season is pouring into my husband, pouring into my children, serving in our local church on a weekly basis. I love the local church so much. God's changed my life through the local church. I've watched him change so many people's lives through the local church. And I just believe it is his work here on earth.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is a lot of ministry though, right? I mean, any one of those things could fill up some serious time there.
Yeah, and I know that that's not for every pastor's wife. Not every woman whose husband is in ministry has kind of the same call. But I do believe that I also have been, I feel like I'm called to ministry as well. So I don't do it because my husband's in ministry. I do it because I feel like it's things God's placed right in front of me.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree with that. And I love talking about that sort of stuff, that it is your call to ministry and that you're a minister of the gospel, even though you're not paid vocationally per se right. Yeah. So can I delve into a little bit just of your history? So what sort of like led you to have those loves for discipleship? And I mean, do you find that just sort of comes naturally or where does that come from?
You know, I don't know that it comes naturally. But it's very much embedded in who I am. I was a young girl. I came to know the Lord in middle school. And I just began to be someone who, I felt like I was someone looking around going, how do I do this? Like, I believe what they told me. I believe in God. I believe that his word, that the Bible is his word. I don't really know how to read it. I don't understand what it's maybe saying to me right now. I don't really even know how I'm supposed to live, but I know whatever God has for me, I want to do it. I want to take part in all that he offers. And so I just became someone who was always looking. And I think I became a student of discipleship just by observation for a long time. There were women in my life who took time to invest in me, who poured into me. I can remember being in high school and our student pastor's wife, I would just show up at her house sometimes. And now that I'm a mother, like now that I have a mother of four children, we have full lives. I think what a sacrifice that was for her to stop what she was doing and to spend time just meeting me right where I was and loving on me, because at the time I didn't really understand the sacrifice that her effort in discipleship, you know, look what that was in my life. I just know that as a recipient of it, it was really life changing. It was really changed the course, the trajectory of where I was headed. And so, that said, there were also seasons of my life where I was looking around for women to watch their lives and to learn from. And there were times when that wasn't as plentiful as I would have liked for it to be, or I didn't really know how to go about asking someone, would you take the time to invest in me? Or am I worth your investment? I guess is what I was wanting to ask. And so I think because of that, because of having it and not having it and looking for it and longing for it, I think all of that just birds in me a desire to be someone that I thought if I ever have anything to offer, I want to pour it out and I want to look for the girls. I want to look for the women who have just a fire in their eyes, a hunger in their eyes, that I wanted to be someone who reached out to them and said, you're worthy not only of God's time, but of my time and in my generation, my women around me, you're worthy of our time. And I want to offer you anything I can to help you in this journey. If there is something God has done in me or for me, and I can share that with you and it will save you pain or hurt, or also if it will just offer encouragement or a glimpse of God's hope for what can come, then I want to do that. And so it's just been something that God has embedded on me from a young age. I now have three daughters that I get to, in a son as well, but three daughters right in front of me that I feel like God has given me them and said, disciple them first. They're your first lines. They're the ones I placed right in front of you. And then from there, though, I love to pour out. I love to offer what I can. I love to encourage. I love to ask questions that help women and help girls think on God, to stir their affections for God, and to help everyone know that that God has the same things for them that he would have for someone who might be in ministry or someone who may have walked with God for a long time. Like, God is available. God himself is available to all of us. And so I love to help just teach women what I've learned. And I don't know everything. I don't want to sound like I do. I'm always learning and just a work in progress. But these are some ways God has shown me that how to read scripture. Just those tools that God gives us along the way. If I can offer those to anyone around me, I always want to.
Yeah. I love all of that. The concept of discipling your children, I feel like, is something that a lot of people don't think about as much as they should, you know? What does it look like for you to disciple your children, on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. A lot of it for me, it is something that we don't think about, I guess, as much, because we think about discipline over discipleship, and those two can definitely go hand in hand. I think they are meant to. We think about, you know, helping our children make the right choice or the wise choice, but we forget that it's our job is to equip them to make the wise choice or the godly choice versus, you know, forcing them into that. Because I have four kids, which I guess is, you know, kind of a lot. The biggest thing for my husband and I is probably relationship building. I think that's really the heart of discipleship. And that looks different in this season, I think. So right now, our kids are getting bigger. They're getting older. They're still young, but our son's in middle school. Our daughters are now all in elementary school. And so face-to-face time in intentional conversation is something that we really have to fight for. So we spend a lot of time with our children. I'm with them a lot. But just giving each one of them my undivided eye-to-eye attention regularly is very important to me. And so one of the things that we do, I don't know how it'll translate, it may kind of sound funny to people, but I schedule, so I have four kids, there's 4 weeks in a month. So every week on my calendar that pops up as a reminder says, you know, this week you're going to go on a date with this child. So my husband and I each take one of our kids for a week. And so if it's, you know, if it's with my son, I just at some point during the week make an intentional effort to get him alone, to sit down across from a table having ice cream or a coffee shop or maybe throwing the ball in the backyard with him, just some way that I get him alone and I am asking him questions. What's going on in life? What's hard for you right now? What's the thing that you're enjoying doing the most, you know, this week? Any problems with friends going on? What, you know, just those questions that allude more than, that evoke more than just a yes or no answer, or today was good, school was fine, I liked it, it was fun. You know, those type of things. I really put forth effort. We both do, as I both do, in asking questions that not only build relationship between us, but also make them thinking people. We want them to be people who think about their life and think on the choices they're making, the consequences they're, you know, having because of those choices. How could you have made a different choice in that situation? What would it have produced? Do you think it would have been different? You know, bringing out empathy and all of those things just to make them people who think beyond what's right in front of them at that age.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's awesome. I'm really inspired by that. I love that. Even the idea of making them people who think is like, I don't know, somewhat novel to me. Not that I don't want my children to think, but just that you've processed that part of it, I think is really interesting. How do you feel like some of your ministry experience sort of in youth ministry and college ministry sort of affects some of how you raise your children, or does it have an effect at all?
You know, I think it does. I think when we're doing ministry on several different age levels has made me realize how valuable every one of those seasons is. Students are valuable. They have opinions. They think. They seek God. They know God. They have deep, intimate prayer lives. Same for college students. We met so many college students who just inspire me and who I'm encouraged by. And same thing with adults. I mean, so I've been able to do that. I help some in our kids ministry as well at church. And so I see the same things happen in children. And so I think one of the things it has done, one of the ways it has impacted me, is just seeing the importance of having relationships across all of those barriers. So it's very important to me that I have relationship with my daughters and their friends. And I have relationships with students in high school and college. And I have relationships with peers, my own age, my own season. But I also have deep relationships with women who are a few seasons ahead of me or several seasons ahead of me. And so it's made me want to do the same thing with my children. We are really intentional, like with babysitters. We have babysitters come into our house. And, you know, I usually say something along the lines of, we're so excited you're here. My girls especially love getting to know high school and college age girls, but letting those young women who come into our home know that, hey, we are entrusting you with one of our greatest possession, our children. And I am so excited that you're speaking the same things to our children from a different perspective, with a different voice, knowing that. So I just want all of these women around my kids to, and men as well, but to be saying the same thing and pointing to Jesus from different seasons of life, maybe different perspectives on things, but all with the same goal. And so, like I said, it's been very important to me just doing those different ministries for my own children and in parenting to want my kids to have relationships that cross age. So they don't just have friendships that are their peers in school, but they know women and men who are high school age and college age and our age, getting to be around our friends who are speaking just life-giving, truth-filled things to them, and then beyond.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because JJ and I are very much the same way as far as, because when you have little kids or kids that are getting up into like the junior high age, like they're not going to be able to talk to you about everything, even though you want them to. And if they have that peer that's, just a little bit older, like going to college or whatever, you know, the friend, they can talk to them about stuff. Like some of our youth ministry girls that have come up are some of our kids' greatest disciplers. Just
that's right.
Being normal, awesome people that are like deeply entrenched in their faith, and like it changes everything.
That's right. That's right. And then when they, you know, at the end of the day, when we come home and we're sitting having conversation with them and they're encouraging us and we're hopefully encouraging them, we just see that it is beautiful and it is right to be streams of living water, to receive and to give out, to have people pour into us and to pour out into others. And that's right on. And that's where we are as well.
Okay. So how do you do that though? Because I feel like that's the one thing that most people don't know how to do, is how to form those relationships and bring those people in. So what do you do to sort of facilitate some of that stuff?
You know, I think one of the best things we can do, or I can do, I think one of the best things I have learned to do, I shouldn't speak for anyone else, is just be someone who is curious, genuinely curious about other people. Not seek to be presumptuous that I know where they are or what they're going through, or I've experienced the exact same thing. I think there is empathy. We can relate to people. We have similar experiences, you know, a lot of us do. But to be a person who is genuinely curious about people around me, knowing that when I ask questions, I get to see them speak from a place of what God has done or is doing, or maybe even the hope of what he will do in their lives, and how that encourages me, but how also I can help encourage them in that. So just, I think asking questions is a great place to start, to get to know people on a level beyond, how are you today? How's life? You know, just we're really good at just brushing past people, quickly running by people, and never really taking time to get to know people on a level that makes the investment is worthwhile as God would maybe have it to be. And so I think asking great questions, cultivating the art of being curious about people. And I think too, for me, when there are times when I am going through something or I am processing something happening in my life, and when I come up to a person who asks me questions, it's so helpful for me to even process what I'm thinking, what I'm going through, maybe see glimpses of God in my own life that I might be missing at the moment. And so I've seen that be true for myself with other people. And I hope that I can maybe do the same for people at times by just being a person who asks questions.
Yeah, so well put. I think you said cultivating the art of curiosity is like so poetic. I mean... I love it.
Well, I don't, those C's do go together well.
Right? I mean, it just rolled off your tongue too. It's like, okay. So one thing I definitely wanted to get to though, is the business that you're doing right now, because I find that super fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit of the history of the business and just sort of where you're at now?
Sure. So my friend and I, we accidentally started a business. And so I have a good friend, and we had had conversations, before about a jewelry business. So we had conversations about it for probably 2 years, just kind of joking, in passing conversation, never really anything of full seriousness. But last fall she came over and she brought some supplies, and we just decided we were going to just put our hands to a task. So backing up just a couple of weeks from that, we had had a conversation, the same friend, I'd pulled out this door hanger, and she and I had made these door hangers for football season. Texas Tech University is in the town, where the city where we live. And so we had made these Texas Tech door hangers several years before. And I had pulled it out for football season, like I've done for several years. And I sent her a picture and I said, remember when we used to create things that weren't required? Remember when we used to put our hands to a task and be creative when it wasn't things we had to do, like jobs and make dinner and help children and homework and, you know, the things that there's just so many things that must be done on a daily basis to make life happen. And we had I'd kind of lost just this sense of putting my hands to a task that was just because, for no other reason than just for fun. And so we had had that conversation. We joked about it. And a few weeks later, she came over with some items to make some jewelry. Anyways, so she came over and she said, "Do you like my earrings?" And I said, "Yeah, I like your earrings." She goes, "I made them and I brought the stuff over and we're going to make some earrings." So we sat down. It was a weekend day. It was a Saturday. Our husbands were watching football and we just began to make and have fun. We were laughing. It was so much fun. And so we just began to make some very terrible, poor quality jewelry, but it was so fun. We were loving it. And we started wearing some of the jewelry. And over the next week or two, some friends started asking us about it. And then we had a few friends say, "You know, I want some. Will you make me this? Will you make me that?" And so we just started doing that. And before long, we were having more people ask us about this. And several people were saying, I want to buy some. I want to buy this from you. Will you make me this? I want to buy that." And we thought, well, we're not going to sell it to you. We'll just make it for you. But we were buying more and more material and it was costing us money. So we were like, we'll let them pay for, you know, a little bit of it and it'll just help us cover the cost of it. Anyways, lo and behold, within just a couple of weeks, we were making a lot more jewelry for people around us than we really ever planned to do. And so people kept asking and wanting to buy it. "Will you sell it? You should sell it." And all of, and, you know, just conversations like that. And my friend said to me, "What if we did? What if we just, you know, started to try to sell it on social media and see what happens?" She said, "What if we could pay for Christmas?" And I just kind of laughed. I was like, "You are out of your mind. Like we would not... we can't pay for Christmas." She was like, "What if we could? What if, you know, what if we just sold enough and we paid for our Christmas for our families?"
Sounds like a dangerous question to me.
It was kind of a dangerous question. What if we could just pay for Christmas? And I really was like, "You have lost your mind. Like, people aren't going to, you know, this isn't going to take off." So that's what we did. We just began to use social media because it was what we had and it was free. And before we knew it, we were spending a lot of our evenings and a lot of our time on the weekend, just trying to keep up with what was happening. And so like I said, it just kind of became a snowball. It grew a lot faster than we ever anticipated. A few people who had some influence grab things and that just perpetuated this snowball of busyness for us. And so we have learned as we've gone. We did not know really much at all about starting a business. We didn't necessarily even mean to start a business, but we did. And it's been fun. It's been a lot of work. I've learned a lot. I've grown a lot. We are figuring so many things out as we go, but it's been a really neat thing to do. And I think being able to do it with a friend and with another person has definitely been to our advantage. I think we've been able to do a lot and do it more quickly and do it more productively and even better because we're in it together.
Yeah, that's you don't hear a lot of people accidentally starting businesses. So
yeah, and maybe
I think that's
she
really
did.
Interesting.
She may not have meant to accidentally start a business, but for me, it was definitely an accident to starting a business. And so, but it has just been, it's been one of the most unexpected and fun adventures of my life, really.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I guess with something like that, you don't automatically think like God is using this for this and this reason or whatever, right? I mean, it's like, "Hey, I'm starting a jewelry business," but it seems like there's such intentionality to how this all happened. I mean, how have you sort of processed like where God is using this or what for? Have you thought through any? I mean, I know you thought through that, but what have you kind of come to?
You know, I think there's a few different angles on that. I think one of those is right before this happened, our church had made a kind of a ploy to our church members on giving. We wanted to be people who advanced the gospel in our city. There were some ways that we felt we could do that in outreach, and there was a call to even give the largest financial gift that we've ever considered giving, the largest financial gift you've ever given. And so my husband and I began to just pray about that. What does that look like? God, what would you be asking us to give? And for us, we felt like God gave us a number, an amount that he was asking us to give. And for both of us, we weren't quite sure how we would do that. We were like, this is what we believe God's asking us to do. We don't really know how that's going to happen. Because right now, with everything in front of us, that seems bigger than what we think we can do. But God, we're just going to trust you in that. And then within weeks of that happening, this business, which I would say accidentally, and I really shouldn't probably use that word, but just began to happen. And so on a personal level, God has used that to answer a call that he placed inside of us that I really had no idea how he would do it. But he has used this for us to be able to take portions of that and funnel it back into the kingdom work that God has called us to. And so it's just been so faith building for Brad and I both to see that if God asks us to do something, even when it looks impossible to my eyes or doesn't make sense on a spreadsheet, he's going to come in and allow us, provide ways for us to do what he has asked us to do. And so for me personally, it's been very faith building, and that's one of the ways it's been faith building. Secondly, I would say beyond our own, just on the backside personally, it's been relationship building. I've been able to build so many relationships with people that otherwise I wouldn't have. And I think when you're in church world, I say that because I think, that's where you are as well. And so what happens a lot of times for me is so much of my community become people through church. And that, while that's great, and I love that, I can at times look back and see I can lose side of interacting with the world at large because we can become kind of focused on church world. And so I feel like it's been one of the ways God's used it has been to just take me far outside of the people I knew, and just build relationships with those inside the church, but also outside the church and outside of our city and outside of our state. Yeah. And it's just really it's really built relationships that go far beyond what I had before, just as far as distance and such. And then I would say probably the third way that I feel like God has used it in my life personally is that I think God has reminded me through this that sometimes we just need to do something. I can be kind of paralyzed in decision making at times, and that's just kind of a fault, and it's just who I am. But I can overthink something so much that I often think an idea to the grave, because I can process, I can look at the advantages, the disadvantages, the pros and the cons. And so for me, kind of falling into this, happening upon this without overthinking it, has just shown me the beauty in taking a risk, watching God work in really unsuspecting, unlikely ways, and that we don't always have to know the end result before we take the first step toward doing something. If I would have known, 7 months ago what would happen, where I would be today, I would have been overwhelmed. But because we didn't, and we just took it one step at a time, and we've seen God come in on every step of the journey, it's just reminded me that the journey is part, the process is part of it. The journey is as beautiful as the where we're headed. And so it has helped me a lot just to not be so paralyzed in decision making or overthinking, and just to do what's right in front of me.
So what are all the details? Where could I pick up some jewelry for myself?
Well, Curry, if you wanted to pick up some jewelry for yourself, you could do that. We actually have an online store. Our business is called Flatlands. That's the name of it. And we live in West Texas, where the lands are flat.
And very so flat, yes.
Very flat. And so just part of embracing our place and embracing the right where God has planted us, that is the name of our business. It's called Flatlands. And we have a website, flatlandsstyle.com.
Okay.
And so that's where we do most of our things. We wholesale there, we retail there. And then, so we've just used the internet, the same thing that we're using to have this conversation, and just breaks down that distance barrier. It has been such a neat tool for us to learn to utilize well in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, well, I will put all those links and stuff in the bio so people can go check out all of that. And so to end up, we like to ask two questions as we sort of wrap up here. So first, what is the most interesting or strangest job that you have ever had?
Well, let's see. What would that be? Probably the most interesting job to me that I've had was I worked at a car wash for a season in college. I had a friend who was managing this car wash here, and he said, "Hey, come work for me." And I said, "Okay, sure." Like I was looking for a job that would be flexible with my schedule, and so he kind of gave me a real quick rundown. He said, "Here's this extra large t-shirt. It's the only one I have." So I put on this big t-shirt and tied it up on the side and went out. And he said, "Here's what you're going to do. You're going to sell these car washes. And, you know, this is kind of the protocol for how you do that." And so I just jumped in and started selling these car washes. Well, I finished day one, and the manager there was like, "You did a really great job." And I was like, "Did I? I didn't know how I was doing. I had no idea. I was just doing what you people told me to do." And then the second day on the job, they said, you are like the second highest salesman in our company." And I was like, "Me? I just started. I have no idea what I'm doing." And they were like, "But whatever you're doing, just keep it up." Third day, you know, third or fourth day, I've worked there, and I'm working a really sporadic schedule. But they were like, "You are the top salesman, not just in the city and for this company, but across the board." And so I was, anyway, so it was a really strange season of a job that I was just, I guess I was killing it. I had no idea what I was doing. And it was always such a shock to me. Anyways, I didn't work there. I didn't work there really long because my schedule changed with school. But I did work at a car wash for a short season in college. And I always look back on that and just kind of laugh at how I became the top salesman for a car wash industry that I really did not have a lot of basis of knowledge about.
Yeah. So you accidentally were really good at sales, and now you accidentally have a business. So I think there's a theme here.
I guess so. That's right. I'm the most surprised person when I do anything. No one is more surprised when something turns out well and is just rocking and rolling for me than I am. So
that's awesome. I love it. Okay. And then finally, this one's tough because you have given so much good advice, I feel like, this entire podcast, and been really inspiring. But what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody trying to bring God and the kingdom into their vocation?
You know, I think for me, one of the things that I have just seen God show up in time and time again, day in, day out, is just the grace that God offers us in the small tasks. And we, you know, if we're a believer, if we, you know, profess that we know Jesus and he's the Lord of our life, and we know he's a God of grace, and we look for the grace, or I look for the grace in large things, large events, you know, struggles when I'm really in a moment of struggle, I'm looking for the grace of God. But I think God has shown me so many times that he wants to not just pour himself out in large moments, but in the small tasks, in the day in, day out of life. And he has so much grace to offer in those moments. It's so important for me to always carry people over process. So whether I'm working with a couple in adoption, I want the people right in front of me to far outweigh the process that needs to take place. But just in general, I have watched God come in and meet me in these small moments. So rather than thinking I need to accomplish or produce or do anything out of my own strength or my own power or my own intentionality, I feel like God is enough. He is big enough, and he has proven himself big enough in my life to supply all of that so that I want to be a person who does everything God has placed right in front of me. I want to embrace my place fully out of the strength that He provides. And so I think I've just learned God wants to show up in the small things. He wants to be enough for us in the small things, because it is in those small things that I think God just allows us to take one step forward every day in a life of faithfulness.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thanks for the advice. And I just can't say thanks enough for joining me and taking time out of your schedule and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's been really fun. A lot of things to talk about, and I've enjoyed it. I'm so excited for your podcast. I love podcasts just in general. And I think they are a great way to fill those moments. If you're like me, and I know a lot of people are, and you don't have a ton of free time, but I do have moments here and there. I have 30 minutes here, or I'm driving from point A to point B, or I'm folding laundry. And so I think podcasts are one of the ways that God is using right now in this year and this season to allow people to tap into something that's life-giving. Because sometimes we think that, you know, when we need to rest or we're overextended or exhausted, that we just need to unplug and veg out. But I think I've learned that I've got to find things that fuel me. And for me, one of the things that does that is podcast. So I love to pop in a podcast when I have a few minutes here or a few minutes there. And every time I come up just feeling focused and excited, and like God's offered me just bits of wisdom from different people. And so I love that you're doing this.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm having a ton of fun. So I get to talk to awesome people like you. So it's been great. So, well,
it has been great.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Ashley today. I think I just even walk away from this podcast and our call just feeling inspired to greater discipleship, not only of my children, but just for others. And just hearing from her was inspiring in a lot of ways. And so I really hope you enjoyed hearing from her. Do get out there and check out Flatland Styles. All of that info is in the podcast notes, the show notes. Get out there and check them out. Buy some stuff from them. They do an awesome, awesome job with their jewelry and just promotion and all that stuff. And you got to respect that jewelry hustle, you know. So please do get out there and check them out. Buy some stuff from them. It's super cute. You got to love it. So, let me know how what you thought of Ashley's interview on social media or wherever you want to. Next week, we have a good friend of mine on. His name is Andrew, and he works with World Relief. My interview with him was inspiring. It was awesome, but it was also really challenging. He has just an amazing perspective on refugees and the refugee crisis, and just the work that's being done about that in our world. And I think you're really going to be challenged and inspired by him. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from him. He's just a cool guy. So look for that next Tuesday. And until then, get out there and hustle.